When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Psychovertical Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Kirkpatrick. Well, I'm in the house today. What time is it? It's nearly 9 o'clock. And it's nice to... I tried to do a podcast this morning as I was walking through the rain, but it was... I was pushing my buggy. If anybody heard the last podcast, I had a child pushing me along and he was kept crying. So I kept putting me off. He's asleep upstairs. I'm going to have a go at doing it on the kitchen table. So today I thought I'd talk about something that cropped up this week. It's not really climbing related. It might be climbing related. It's also a topic that might be upsetting or controversial to some people. It definitely was. That's why I'm going to talk about it, because it seemed to rile a lot of people. But I did a post, like anybody who's been following my Instagram account, which is like Instagram at Psychovertical, for the last few months, I've been trying every day to just post something to do with equipment, because that's the next kind of book I'm going to do, is like an equipment kind of book. So I've just been posting little things like the history of bits of equipment, how military gear, evolved and became sort of outdoor gear, lots of little sort of tips, big, like some good tips in there and some just like basic kind of tips, but just mainly as like an exercise, like getting up in the morning. So I'll get up at like sort of 6 o'clock, and when I sit down, I'll just literally find an image and go, oh, I could write something about that image and then post it, and that's it. It's like a probably like 10-20 minute kind of job. Just do it. So it's just like it's a very good exercise anyway. Every morning, like it's good to every morning you should probably wake up and read something, like read a book or something, like read a few pages of a book. You should not be waking up and putting your phone on and seeing what the news is. That's definitely not what you should be doing. But you should ideally like begin the day reading something and then creating something. So the classic thing is you have a sheet of paper and you have to write something. You have to spend 5 minutes looking at this piece of paper and you have to write something on it. It doesn't matter what it is, just write something on it. So this is a kind of variation of that, really. And it's the only social media. I had a period before Christmas when I was like on, I went back on Twitter for a while because we're having this baby. So I was awake at like, 4 a.m. and stuff. So I was kind of bored. So like Twitter is a little bit like, a gladiatorial kind of combat. Like you jump in there and you start like slugging it out with people. So, but it's for me, like Twitter seems to have died a death. So I've deleted Twitter like several thousand times. Like I've been on it since 2008. And I always like archive all my, I had like 24,000 tweets on it the first time I archived them all, because I always archive it. And I'm like, I'm just gonna get off this. I'm gonna delete it, deactivate its account. But I always archive it, because I'm always like, well, someone's gonna say, well, you only came off because you said something really racist or something. So I've always, you know. So I always like to. You always have this 30 days before you can, you know, you have like 30 days once you deactivate it, and if you can reactivate after 30 days. And so far, every time I've deactivated, it's a little bit like when you give up like heroin or something, and you know the drug dealer like rings you up every day like, oh, how you doing, you know, well done for giving it up, and you're like, oh, cheers mate. And then next day he rings you up, how you doing, like, oh, I'm okay. And then anyway, the on the third day you like go around and, you know, buy loads of heroin. So I'll have to be careful. If you give up heroin, that's why people always overdose, because they go into prison and they don't have any heroin, and then they come out and they have the same amount as they did, and that kills them. So before, because they sort of lose the, you know, their what do you call it, tolerance for heroin. So it's a bit like that with social media. Like you go off social media for like a week, and then you come back and you're just like, ah, and you're like, I hate you, fuck you, come right, where do you live, I'll come and beat you up, and all that kind of stuff. So but anyway, we shall see, if I finally stay off it. But anyway, but I'm mainly trying to just stick on Instagram, because I like Instagram. I've always had this confusion why I seem to be controversial and why I seem to upset everybody. You know, it's like for always like Adolf Hitler, like I just don't get it. Like I'm just trying to do good stuff. Do you know what I mean? Or Stalin, like, hey, like you got to kill a couple of million people, haven't you, to get shit done around here? So yes, I'm always been. I remember the first time someone told me that was controversial. I think I was in London. I was in some pub, and someone's sister was like, "Oh, yeah." Someone told me about you. Like you're always, you know, you're very controversial. I had no idea what she was talking about. But yeah, I do seem to upset people. I don't know why. Maybe it's a Yorkshire thing. I don't know. I think maybe the older you get, the less you kind of care. And I don't really need anything off anybody. Like I don't need money off anybody. So, you know, I guess I have like, you know, sort of fuck you money. But I don't know if this is true, but the first time someone told me that fuck you money was I was working on some filmy type thing, and someone told me he was working on Titanic with James Cameron, and he told everybody that no one could go to the toilet until he'd finished this scene, and he just got up and he said, see you guys, you know, I've saved up enough money to say fuck you, and he walked off or something. So I don't know if that's a true story, but I always thought it was kind of funny. So when you are controversial, you do get a lot of, I actually get a surprising number of messages from people, famous people, who always seem to ask me advice on what to do if they've suddenly, you know, if they've called a new route something, and then people have said they're a white supremacist or something. You know, like they called a route like, you know, I want to kill trans people or something, and then they're like, what? I don't get it. I don't mean literally, you know. So they always seem to come to me. I'm not very good at giving them advice. I just say, like, don't apologize, and just, you know, just people just forget about it. It's a bit like, you know, when a bear kind of attacks you, you should always lay down, you know, when you're all like cut to ribbons and, you know, mauled half to death, you just lay there, and eventually it'll go away, or it'll eat you. So that's a good thing with these kind of things. But also there's always a kind of element. I think I told somebody, it's like, I don't even heard this saying, but it's like, you know, you get in a pig pen and you're fighting with the pig, and you're like rolling around in the mud and fighting for your life, and then suddenly you realize that the pig's actually enjoying it. You know, it's probably got like a hard on or something. So that you always have to be aware of that. Like some people, they really get off on it. It's like the mountain rescue teams. You know, they love it. They love going and rescuing people, but they'll always complain. But they really do love it. You know, otherwise they'd have to pay them. So yeah. So I wrote this thing is kind of short, and nearly everything, it's like sometimes when you write something on social media or Instagram, whatever, people seem to think that you've really thought this out, like you've really maybe sat down over a few days, you know, working out a, you know, outline and then sort of, you know, break it down into paragraphs and, you know, sort of maybe having someone proofread it and, you know, passing it around a few people, like, what do you think about this? But it's, you know, I don't know if other people do that. I don't know. I know a lot of people, they don't actually write their Instagram posts. They're just, you know, if everyone from the North Face says the same thing on the same day, I'm guessing they're not all like have a hive mind. I'm guessing that some marketing companies just, you know, has control over their, you know, best jacket ever, hashtag blessed, the kind of, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, so I don't have a marketing team. Ideally, I don't want anyone to see it who I know, like the idea my mum would ever see it. Well, that's why my mum got on social media. So that's why I probably toned it down a bit, because my mum would get upset. And in the past, I did have to tone it down because Vanessa, my wife, got upset. And she was like, I hate the way people think you're like horrible and all that kind of stuff. And that's not who you are. And like, little did she know, that's what I am. So anyway, I don't want her to see that kind of thing, people being upset. So, but it's difficult because I always seem to upset everybody, no matter what you write, someone's going to get upset. Actually, it's not that they get upset. That doesn't really matter. It's that I'm very defensive and I'm very thin skinned. So I tend to overreact because that's just the way I am. That's how you get, you know, if someone kicks you in the balls, you know, you punch them in the face. That's, you know, I'm not one of these like, you know, thank you, you know, that kind of thing. It's just the way you are. Oh God, the heating's coming on. Hopefully you can hear that. So I just sat down, and basically what I just read something about like a 16-year-old kid who was really into the outdoors and all that kind of stuff, like committing suicide and because of COVID. And then I was like talking to someone on the telephone who was like super, super, you know, super upbeat, and they were like saying how depressed they were. So I was basically angry when I wrote this, which I think is a good thing. I think I was kind of so angry that later on people started asking, questioning some things I'd written, and I had no memory of even writing it. So that shows that I just wrote what I was thinking. And I didn't reread it or anything. I just posted it. Usually, because I'm kind of busy doing something else, and maybe Vanessa came in the room. I didn't want her to see what I was doing. Or you know, sometimes you do get in this kind of flow state of writing where you just write a lot of shit. But sometimes there's some good stuff in there. But you are like channeling something. So I'll read through it and then we'll have a quick talk about it. So. It's tough getting on the phone. It's tough getting off the phone from the most positive person you know when they tell you they're feeling depressed. Do you feel the same? If so, here are some non-pharmaceutical ideas, strokes, options. Number one, you are not depressed. Life is just shit, and so you feel shit. Unmotivated, confused, anxious, worried about how you're going to get through this. Depression is something like losing a baby or being told you're dying of cancer. So don't use that term to describe how you feel, but give that feeling something that means something real. Number two, being on social media, Instagram is okay. Watching the news, listening to the radio is like attaching a very small hose from your car's exhaust to your mouth. It will fucking kill you slowly. Get off it. And if you can't get off it, find some way of getting it away from you for a few hours, days or weeks. In brackets, use a blocking app, give it to a friend to hold, smash it with a hammer. Number three, stop watching so much TV. It really does rot your brain, really does make you fat, mushy brained, pathetic, passive, rabbit-minded loser. Number four, listen to more music, read more books, ring more people up and talk shit to each other. Maybe they feel worse than you. Number five, stay off the carbs and the sugar. Number six, realize that you are the focus of the greatest ever public service propaganda campaign in the history of the planet, run by idiots who would be best sticking to selling washing powder. Number seven, get a dog and go for a walk. think about someone else apart from your sad ass self. If you don't have a dog, go steal one, in brackets, it'll make you feel alive, especially when you get caught. That was probably the most controversial bit about stealing the dog. I didn't even remember writing that. So number 8, break some rules, in brackets, be a sinner. Number 9, if you can't express how you feel and think, everyone you know is a pod person, then start. Oh, I bet I'm spoiled. Oh, no, what's that? Oh, sorry. That's a bit for later on. If you can't express how you feel and think everyone you know is a pod person, then start writing sci-fi. That's a bit obscure. Finally, the best advice you could ever have been given, the advice we were all given but ignored, and for years on mugs, posters, t-shirts, is keep calm and carry on. And remember, as at its worst, we never had it so good. So that very mundane post seemed to engender a lot of very upset people. Maybe there were dog owners. I'm not sure, but I suspect it was. I know a lot of it was about talking about mental health and being flippant about it. And apparently, I even it was a misstep by me. You know, this is the worst criticism I could have, that I overstepped the mark, which probably means someone doesn't really know who I am anyway. So that doesn't matter. So I thought I would take this opportunity to briefly talk about sort of the brain, mental. I don't even like using the term mental health. It's the brain stuff, brainy stuff, like stuff that goes on in your mind, stuff that, you know, in your thoughts and all that kind of stuff. Now, this is like Robert Steiner, who translated my books into German, has this great thing. He calls it like pig farmer philosophy, where you aren't qualified, you know, to give an opinion, but you do anyway, and it's like a pig farmer philosophy. And in a way, it's kind of like it. Like if you're having some kind of, if you feel like you're having some sort of mental health issue, I guarantee if you went to see a pig farmer, they could probably sort you out. They could probably say, you know, be like, oh God, you know, I just so unmotivated, I'm, you know, bipolar and all that kind of stuff. And he'd be like, you know, go and clean all that shit out of that pen over there. And you go in there, the pig would attack you, you'd be fighting with it. And you'd be like, oh my God, Andy's right. Like it's fucking enjoying this. And before you know it, you'd feel fine. You know, it'd be amazing. And so I think pig farmers, you know, pig farmers are, you know, there's something about it. But I need to point out that I'm not a qualified psychiatrist. Like I can't spell psychiatry or psychiatrist, or I have trouble spelling the difference between psych and psyche, so I'm really psyche to do this. So we just get all that down here. Now, we do live in an age where no one is allowed to put forward any kind of opinion unless they have a degree or some sort of doctorate or something, or, you know, PhD in something. Now, I don't have any of those things. I've never been a practicing medical type person or brain type person. So everything I'm saying here is, you know, it's a bit like in my article, in that little thing I wrote, I said about stealing a dog. Now, I don't think, I'm not telling anyone to steal a dog. In the same way, if I said, like, if you go into a toilet and there's a hole in the wall, stick your dick through it and see what happens. Like, I don't really think you should, because that's just a joke, you know. And if you ever go into a toilet and you see a hole in the wall, it'll make you laugh, because you're like, oh, I remember that, you know, you don't know what it is. So, you know, but don't stick your dick through it. But that's what I'm talking about, you know. I don't know anything about sort of having sex with men in toilets, but I've got an opinion about it. You know, it's completely fine. So this is the stuff I'm going to say now is, I'm not recommending. This is my, as a 49-year-old person, this is my observations about myself and about other people around me. So, like, I would like I could go very deep into this, the point where you would think I was insane. Like I was actually interacting with someone today about this issue, and I probably went to the point where he never replied because I just sound like a crazy person. But you sort of build up, like you have to kind of build up some kind of map or kind of landscape in your mind. Like if you're a visual person, that's how you have to do it. You have to construct some kind of operating system in which you don't go fucking crazy, because like literally we are underqualified to be human beings. Well, we're well qualified to be like hunter gatherers, out in the savannah or whatever, like chasing after wallabies or whatever. But we're really not up to scratch for where we find ourselves when we're born. Like almost as soon as you start walking, you're fucked basically. You know, someone sticks you can't even count yet, and someone's shoved an iPad in your hand and is getting you to do shit with it. You know, like we're basically driven insane. We go crazy very, very early. And in order to try and stay sane, we have developed this idea of creating an unreality, like a subjective reality. And that reality is probably what you would in the past call religion. So religion is, it gives you this set of, it gives you some idea. It's like, what they say, it's like science before we had science. So it gives you like a few ideas, like why does the sun go up and why is there thunder and why did like children die of the plague? And, it's all these kind of things. Like it was not super effective, but, everyone believed the same thing at the same time. Depending if you went somewhere else and they might believe something different, but everyone's basically believing the same, so Judaism is like, this is working pretty well. The Jews are doing pretty well out of it. Like they seem to be a coercive unit, they're not killing each other. So we'll get some of this Christianity stuff, like Judaism 2.1 or it is 2.0. And then the Muslims are like, that's pretty good. We'll have some of that. And anyway, so that kind of system, seemed to be quite effective. So people, it was good for the time, but time, we live in much more complex lives in a way, do we? Maybe not. I don't know. We live much easier lives anyway, so we have more time to think about this kind of shit. Like we're not fighting with pigs. We're just fighting with like probably electronic pigs on our phone as we're sitting on a tube train or something. So this subjective kind of reality, like the Matrix, you could call it, or whatever, some kind of religious matrix, it's kind of effective. And then we kind of get rid of religion, and we get rid of we kind of destroy our sort of cultural kind of things because they're all fashioned, and we'll get rid of all this crap. It's why do we do all this kind of stuff, like why do we really need like to be surrounded by our families and our cousins and uncles and aunties? We everyone, let's just go and live as far apart as ever, let's go and live in a different place, different country, whatever. Like, do I even need to be married anymore? I'll just leave my wife and I'll just, she can look after the kids, and, I'll just be by myself. I'll just find somebody and we'll just Grindr or what, one of those things. Very homoerotic tonight. No, not Grindr, it's the other one. Anyway, Tinder or something. So basically the operating system, it wasn't great, the operating system we had. It was like sort of Windows 95 or something. But what we have now is some Club Penguin or something. We just have some really thing. So as a roundabout, I'm just basically telling you that the container of our sanity, like the boundary of our sanity that's supposed to keep us, give us the illusion that we're sane, when really we're not. Like everyone believes like some crazy shit. And this COVID thing is like it demonstrates how crazy we are, like with the masks and all that kind of stuff. Like we are crazy human, we are crazy animals basically, but in a lovely way, in a nice way. So like, we don't want to be robots, do we? We don't want to be, like Dr. Spock or whatever, unless you're half human, then maybe that's the best of both worlds. So I think when you are forced to experience objective reality. So if you, I've never read any Ayn Rand, but Ayn Rand is like, you know, the patron saint of objectivism. But basically, objectivism is reality. So if you're like a, if you're a soldier, if you're like a, you know, you're in the Marines, you know, in the Marines, and you're living in this kind of, you know, you're living in a subjective reality like everybody else, and you also have this subjective reality of war and of killing and of heroism and of duty and of patriotism and all that kind of stuff. And then you go to Iraq and you just see people like blown to pieces, and you see children crushed by tanks, and you see like horrific stuff, and you basically, the subjective reality is completely destroyed. You don't, you know, you lose all your navigation points in your mind. You don't really believe, you're really made aware that everything you believed was just like an illusion, really. And you are like fully kind of exposed to this, to objective reality, like the horror, of your existence. So I would say, I've never killed anybody, I've never been in a war, but that is my interpretation of what happens. So when you come back, you basically cannot ever, you cannot rebuild this shattered subjective reality. Every, you know, people are talking about, oh no, the Cardassians are getting divorced, or do you see the football last night, whatever, and you're just like, I just saw like a baby get blown up or something. So it's very, very hard to come back from that. And I think in a way, in my breaking out of this, like it's going to be like, oh, look at, listen to him. He's not in a, he's not in a subjective reality. But in my, in my life, as in going, climbing mountains and things, like when you're in these places, it's very hard to hold on to, you know, this sort of false reality, because you really have to deal with where you are and the people you're with. And, you know, people under really, people in extremis can generally not maintain these ways of seeing themselves. Because this unreality that we live in is sustained and bolstered and reinforced by all the media we consume, like the, you know, like advertising, movies, television, the news, you know, it's all there kind of to try and, like, you could, people, it is a form of brainwashing, but it's not there. It's not intentional. It's because we're all doing the same. Like if we all went to church, Catholic church, no one in that church is evil, and the Pope's not evil and all that kind of stuff. It's like the hive mentality of like, we have to try and, like, this is true, isn't it? Like, why, what's he talking about? Like, some people won't know what I'm talking about here as well, but some people will kind of understand what I'm saying here. So there's no like grand conspiracy of let's brainwash everybody by, you know. So the classic one I would always say is that like every other advert on television has like a biracial couple on it. And if you look at the statistics for, you know, in Scotland or Wales, like it's 99% of people are white Welsh people or Scottish people. And in England, you know, was it like 3% or something of people are black and 7% are Asian or whatever. So, but it creates a, you know, people would say, well, what's wrong with that? Like, what does it really matter? And I would say, yeah, it does, because you are building the false reality that's built has to somehow reflect what you see outside your door. Otherwise it starts kind of breaking down. And when you know, like the thingy in the Matrix, the glitch in the Matrix, like you know, people start questioning, it becomes more and more like faith. Like, things aren't how I think they are. Like, I read that the crime is getting less and less, but when I go outside, I feel less and less, you know, I feel more and more scared, and I see more criminal behavior, and someone broke into my car and blah, blah, blah. So if you're going to have an effective false reality, it needs to be well maintained. So I'm completely. This is the bit I wasn't going to talk about because it's too crazy. But fundamentally, you need to either fully go into this false reality. So maybe that's one reason why people who are exposed to objective reality, to reality, is they often become religious, because religion is, well, it's well thought out. It's very effective. Like I used to be I hated religion. I was a total bigot, basically. I hated religious people, but I have a huge amount of respect for religion, religious people. I think people poo-poo them but it's a mistake, basically. And having lived in an Islamic country, you know, where everyone is believing the same thing, you know, it really is a very effective way of, you know, it's totally insane, but at the same time, it's very, very effective at creating a very stable society where everyone agrees, yeah, this is a bit mad, but I agree. I'm going for it. And the same with Mormons. Like, Mormons are amazing people, fantastic people. All these religions have problems, but no worse than, I would say, secular people. I'd say secular people have a lot more shit. They have problems than these other groups. So religion is this, like, you know, you have your reality completely falls apart. And you come home and people are like, oh, why did you go to Iraq? You were just, you know, it was just all about oil and all that kind of stuff. And you're like, I thought it was about patriotism, but, you know, it isn't, and all that kind of stuff. So religion, you know, religion or something else, you know, water paint, watercolors, you know, you have to sort of somehow reconstruct the landscape in your mind, or you rewrite your operating system. So maybe, like, like, my dad has done a lot of work with people with PTSD, and we have, like, conversations about it. And I think there is an element where people go down into layers. Like, you're kind of naive about the world. You have this kind of, you know, very naive view of politics and right and wrong. And then you go and fight in a war, like in Iraq, or go to Afghanistan or wherever. And then you start reading The Guardian, and you're like, oh my God, like, look at this corporate stuff and oil and all that kind of stuff. And you basically feel like you've been raped or something. Like, you feel like you've just been, you know, you've just been used, which is like, you're already fucked. And now you just think, like, it was all for nothing. So I always think you need to go deeper. Like, you have to understand about geopolitics, and you have to understand that no matter how fucked up and evil it is invading countries, like, there is some kind of element of sort of mad, you know, there's some sort of mad theory behind all these things, even if it's totally immoral. There is, you know, these things happen for various reasons. But so I think you have to really square these things, you know. You can't be too judgmental of yourself and everything else. So God, I'm really going off the topic here. So I would say that basically, a lot of people are dealing with on a macro scale. You know, people are living within a reality that is designed to try and keep them sane, but it becomes less and less effective because, you know, kind of people are like, the problem with the internet is it kind of opened Pandora's box, and that people were suddenly able to, you know, gain a lot more knowledge. Where before, you know, you have to go to a library and they only had so many books, or you'd go to a bookshop and you'd stand there all day reading books for free. But you know, suddenly people had a lot more access to knowledge, and some of the knowledge was good, and some of it was bad, and some of the knowledge needed, like, sort of thorough interpretation, and people can be easily led, you know, led down, sort of, you know, led in the wrong direction. And now you have, like, a media which you've always trusted and always maintained this, you know, you felt secure that what they were telling you was true. And I think now you have a media which is trying, well, you have the whole system is trying to pull everyone to a place where they're back under control, which I think in a way, most people, you know, I'm kind of shocked how easy people are with like censorship and, you know, agreeing on things which I don't think are true. But people, you know, it's almost like it's better to all believe something that's not true than for us all to believe something different. So, as a result of that, we have a, you know, probably half the people don't believe, you know, rightly don't believe anything anymore from that they're told by one's trusted media, and that leaves this void, and that void gets filled with all this, you know, crap, you know, real information, disinformation, you know, information warfare, all that kind of stuff. So people, I would say like almost everyone I know is going crazy, you know, generally in bad ways, or they're having, learned helplessness, you know, where you torture someone to the point where they just give up and you're not going to get anything out of them. They're just useless. And I think people have become like that. They just disengage from everything, and they just live in a different kind of world, which is kind of effective in a way. Like you just bring the walls in, you know. It's like lines in a fort, you know, like people have just gone into the citadel now. They're gonna, hopefully they'll survive in there. So that's some sort of Adam Curtis kind of stuff I'm talking about there. And you don't have to believe what I'm talking about. You know, this is only my interpretation of the world. So there are many others that have nothing to do with what I'm talking about. Like, this is my, how I sort of square the things I see around me. So then on a sort of a micro scale, you have like just generally the shit that people have to deal with of being human beings, you know, relationships with other people, disappointments, you know, all the kind of stuff that goes on in life. And there's a weight of being human, of being a human being. And if you're not a standard human being, if you're gay, if you're a minority, you know, so if you're black in a country full of white people, if you're white in a country full of black people, if you're Asian and everyone's black, whatever, you know, but there's a, you know, if you're tall, if you're fat, if you've got ginger hair, you know, if your eyes are crossed, you know, all humans have a burden of being alive, and they have the burden of their dreams, basically the dreams and their bad experiences. Now, I think one problem is we in the West, not so much in other places, like you would never really be having this conversation if we were in Kenya or Namibia or somewhere like that, and probably not if, you know, in lots of countries we wouldn't, but here it is like a massive, massive problem that's just getting worse and worse and worse, which is mental health kind of problem. So, we are like so atomized as people. We've never been so far, never been apart and together, you know, all that kind of bullshit. Again, that's a subjective lie. Do you know what I mean? That's not true. You know, we've never been so apart. That's it. There's no such thing as like we've never been so apart together. So this kind of marketing is a major problem to me, because I think it's just so piss poor, basically. So people have all this crap that's going on in their lives, and what has happened, I think, is that we have increasingly sort of pathologized ourselves in order to come to terms with ourselves, and to try and maybe someone gives you an option of like, here, like, I will help you, I will take this pain away, or something of this, you know, something awful that's happened in your life, and I'll, you know, here's a pill, or actually here's a diagnosis, and how you're feeling, you know, it's not normal, and you have anxiety, or you have depression, or you're bipolar, or all these kind of things. So we're increasingly becoming, we're pathologizing ourselves, and we're being pathologized, and we're being told that it's okay. Like, it's okay to be basically it's okay to be a weak, pathetic loser. And to the point where if anyone demonstrates any kind of toughness or robustness or tells people to pull themselves together, like you have no other option but to fucking pull yourself together, like pull yourself round, like you have to be strong for people around you. Those kind of people are just seen as being tall assholes, or, you know, oh, it's okay for you, all that kind of stuff. But really, you know, we have a point where all this complete obsession with being empathic and being caring and it's actually has the opposite response. Like, I don't know why that is, but I think it's making people more and more ill, and it's not an effective strategy. Like the old classic, you know, people were much happier in the Blitz, you know, than they were, you know, in the 90s when it was like, you know, boom time. So is, you know, the idea of the stiff upper lip is there was something there, and there was something about, you know, people having to be strong for each other when people were in close proximity. You know, people were going through far worse things than is going on right now, and they somehow, you know, like some people committed suicide, and there was like shit going on under the surface. But at the same time, you know, people seemed to be able to have coping strategies which weren't to do with like drugs, basically, and it wasn't to do with having like total mental breakdowns. And everyone, you know, like as soon as you mention depression, almost everyone you meet will tell you, like, I've suffered with depression, I've survived depression, I'm bipolar, and it's like, oh, for God's sake, like, it's just depressing me just talking to you all. So there is like the pathologizing of the human condition, which is not an ideal. Like, we have this sort of worldview of looking through Instagram, looking through social media, which is maximizing the mania inside us, where we are like measuring ourselves with everybody else, like, oh God, they look so happy, and oh, what, you know, and you know, you can see your ex-girlfriend on, you know, on Instagram, and she's getting married, or she's living in a big house, or whatever. Like all these kind of things, like they're not normal, basically, and they're kind of dementing us. So a good example of this, an example of this is, like, people always say, oh, I have like a chemical imbalance in my brain, and that's why I'm depressed, or that's why I've got bipolar. Now, I would say that is like someone saying, well, first of all, it's not true. There's no such thing as like a chemical imbalance in your brain. So yeah, that'll upset some people if that's what you've been told, but that's just not true. But if it was true, it's almost like saying, see this, I've got this big gunshot wound, you know, in my leg. And it's like, how did that happen? It's like, I have no idea. It's like, but people don't realize, it's like, it's having a gunshot wound, not thinking a bullet went through it. You know, where did the bullet come from? Oh, a bullet. I didn't know bullets did that, you know. So if there's some change in your brain, like, yes, some people will tell you, like, oh, it just happened. One day I woke up and I was like massively depressed. And I'm sure that happens to some people, but the majority of the people, when you talk to them, you know, so you'll have someone who is a single mother, she's got three kids, she lives in a shit house, she's got no money, she lives in a shit estate, her kids go to a shit school. Kids have no prospects in life, basically. They're just going to end up the same as her, and they're never going to escape out of it. And she goes to the doctor, and she's like, doctor, I feel like committing suicide. And the doctor's like, I've only got like 7 minutes to see you, because I've got like a you know, waiting room full of like depressed people. What's wrong with you, love? Is you got a chemical imbalance in your brain? Here, take these tablets for the rest of your life, and everything's gonna be fine. So, you know, she goes away and she's like, oh, I had a chemical imbalance in my brain, you know. So it's, you know, like, that's literally what people will say. So there was a documentary and it was about bipolar disorder. Now you got to remember, like, I'm not a professional here. So I will let me get to the end before you judge me for what I'm saying. And it was a program about bipolar disorder, and it was all these new remedies for bipolar disorder. And they, you know, at the beginning, they kind of admitted they didn't know what it was, but it was just, you know, it was a real thing, like famous people have it and all that kind of stuff. And they were going through all these different remedies, and you could put this like electrode in your brain, and you could put the, you know, give them this like special kind of this new drug that they were developing using ketamine or something. And, you know, billions of, you know, the I think antidepressants, it's worth like $21 billion a year. Like, it's, you know, like a third, or maybe a fifth or a third of people are on the antidepressants. Like, it's, you know, it's gone crazy. So anyway, so yeah, I went through these people. It's like, oh yeah, I felt a bit better, blah, blah, blah. And then right at the very end of the program, they were like, oh, and by the way, like, what was going on in your life at the time when you had bipolar disorder? And they were like, oh, I was working like, you know, 500 hours a week, and my son had just died, and da, da, da. And all these people had these completely, you know, valid reasons for feeling depressed, basically. It wasn't like something just flicked on in their head. They'd, you know, it's the same as if you, you know, it's like beating your body up, or beating your mind up. Like, people often, you know, push their minds into places. Your mind is not meant, it's not capable of doing what people ask for it to do sometimes. You know, you take on too much work, too much stress, too much debt, you drink too much, you smoke too much, you don't eat properly, and all these kind of things. And your brain can rapidly like unravel, and often it'll come, you know, bad decisions will compound other bad decisions, and before you know it, you've gone like totally crazy. So generally there's a part of this which is that once you start thinking more of it in the other way around, like, why is this happening to me? Why am I feeling like this? Can I do something about this? Like, instead of thinking like, I'm depressed, I'm bipolar, I need to go and get some pills, and maybe these pills is like going into a coma, you know, like when the doctor puts you into a coma, and you know, all your skin's burnt off, and they'll have an induced coma, and hopefully by the time they bring you back out of it out again, your skin's all grown back, and you won't, you know, the pain won't be too much. So there's that kind of element of like, well, you know, I've just found out I'm married, and I've turned out I'm gay, and I've got kids, everything else, this is not a true story, and you know, like, I'm having to split up with my husband, and I'm feeling really depressed about it, and I'll just go and get some pills, and I'll just take them, and that might just give me a lift, you know, to get through it. So, you know, that's for up to people to do what they want to do. I'm not being judgmental of anybody, but again, it's, if the younger you are, if you listen to this, and if you're 10 or something, you know, if you're younger, it's worth listening to what I'm telling you, because you won't listen to me anyway. But, you know, in retrospect, you look back and you can see all these things in your life that that fucked you up later on. And, you know, little things you do in the past can have these massive ripples. So it's a universally great analogy. But it's, you know, you see a big ship on the horizon. And it passes by like a huge cargo ship. It just passes by, and you're standing on the shore, and then 20 minutes later, a massive wave comes and like washes you into the sea. So it's a little bit like that, you know, like something happens in the past, and you don't really know how that's going to, you know, often all these ripples will all join together, and it'll lead up to having some sort of massive mental breakdown when you're in your, you know, midlife crisis or whatever. So that's one element of it. The other element is just trying to avoid all the stuff that's going to fuck you up, fuck your brain up. So, you know, avoiding, you know, be careful what you eat, you know, like food, what you're eating is probably has a humongous effect on you. Like, you know, I'll meet people and they're old and they've just been diagnosed as diabetic, and you just look at what they're eating. It's like, are you a fucking idiot? Like, why are you taking those pills? Like, why don't you just change your diet? And like, oh, well, I've changed it a bit because they said I couldn't do this. It's like, you know, like, you know, just try changing your diet. It's like, well, the doctor said this is the best, you know, well, just try it. What's the worst that can happen? You just die. So, you know, so your diet's a massive thing, you know, going walking. I don't want to say mindfulness because, you know, I don't like all that crap, but you know, the more you move, the more you move, the more you're like engaging with objective reality. So if you go out walking in the rain and you're piss wet through and you're miserable, you know, you're exactly where you are. You know, your brain doesn't wander when you're walking around. You've got massive blisters on your feet. You know, I'm going for like two hour walk in the morning, and I'm going for another like 2 hour walk in the afternoon at the moment, and another hour late at night because I'm pushing the stupid pram around. But you know, when you're doing it, it's like such a healthy thing. Now, again, when you're depressed, all this sounds like bullshit. Like you can't, you know, you just can't even open your eyes, let alone go for a walk. But these are more like why don't we have people talking about how not to get depressed? Would that not be a really good idea? Instead of how, what to do, like we're investing like billions and billions and billions into being depressed. Why don't we invest a little bit into like not being depressed? So I was trying to sleep as well. Sleep's another one. You know, so we go back to the whole social media thing, like get rid of your phone, you know, don't use your computer at night, read a book when you go to bed. Like these are really, really simple things which are 100 times more effective than any kind of antidepressant. And if you research into antidepressants, you realize that nearly all of them are at best not very effective, and at worst they're not effective at all. But it's almost like you know, if I go and see a shaman and he gives me a rabbit's foot and I've got like a bad leg, you know, I break my leg and he gives me this rabbit's foot and he goes, put this rabbit's foot in your pocket and your leg will get better. And I'm like, cheers, doc. And I go away. And then, you know, after a few weeks, my leg is great. I'm like, oh my God, that was amazing. So that's how most of these things work. Like your body has an amazing capacity to mend itself. And that's kind of, that's what it does. So, you know, if your girlfriend leaves you and you're brokenhearted and you're so depressed and you want to kill yourself, if you can avoid killing yourself and you can go for a walk and you can interact and all that kind of stuff, eventually you will get over it. You know, time heals all wounds, apart from like, you know, severed legs and, you know, chopped off legs and arms. So, you know, there is like in a way, like a lot of antidepressants are, that's what they are. They're just like a sugar pill. Like, take this, go away, you know, take it every day and you'll get better. And it's like, oh, weird. That's, you know, after a few years, things got better. So it's worth pointing out here, we've got a thing here between the people who think that they have mental illness problems and the people who are mentally ill. Now, in my life, I've met a few people who were properly mentally ill. Now, when you meet someone, do you know, when you meet someone who's got cancer, there's some kind of thing. When someone says, I've got cancer, it creates a weird reaction. Like, you don't know what to say. You don't know what to do. And you're maybe a little bit like repelled by that person. Like, that's really horrible to say that. But in a way, there's something about it. Now, when someone is like properly mentally ill, it's exactly the same. You know, they're not the kind of person who would say, I'm mentally ill or I'm feeling, you know, they are like properly mentally ill. Now, the people I know got mentally ill, like one person killed himself and the other person, I don't know what's happened to that person, but they are like, I once picked this person up on the road. I saw her like hitchhiking. I picked her up. And I was driving along and I knew her, I'd known her like pretty well. And I was like, oh, someone told me you'd gone mad. And she was like, oh yeah, I had like a, you know, a psychotic episode. And I was like, all right, are you feeling better? She's like, oh yeah, I'm good now. And she said, yeah, what it was is like people were like firing lasers into my brain and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so it turned out she was not good at all. You know, she was still, and like when you meet someone who's properly mentally ill, it's like, oh, like, I did think I was a bit depressed before, but now I think actually I'm okay. Like this is not something you know, when people, the joke is that you don't go, you know, you go for a date and you might say something, I'm a bit bipolar, but you never say, you know, I'm schizophrenic. You know, I often think about stabbing people. Like you don't, you know, people, there's a line between, you know, there's this thing where everyone has to demonstrate that they're mentally, some sort of mental illness, or they're weak in some way. Like how many people would say, I've never had any problems with anything, I'm totally solid, I don't even think about it, you know, it'd be like, oh God, listen to him, a bit up his own arse. So people like Pete Whitaker, that's what he'd be like. He'd be like, don't know what it is. So, all right, people in Africa, you know, I don't know what the stats are, but, you know, people are, you know, suffering and smiling. You know, that's kind of one way of going through it. So, this is probably like totally rambling and bullshit. And some people are probably offended. Some people are switched off. But I'm actually talking to the reason I kind of have developed these some of my theories about, you know, how not to go mad is in the past. I would, it's hard to say, but I think I did go mad. I had like a psychotic episode in the past, and which is in a way like it's like a massive shame. It's like I feel shame about it. But the worst thing about it is once you have gone, so this is kind of not like I'm a bit depressed. It's like, you know, this is like super serious kind of, really super serious kind of thing. And but the worst thing about it is you never ever really trust yourself. You never really trust, like in Psychovertical, the film, I think there's a bit where I say like, I'm a dangerous man. And that's what I'm talking about, is I don't really trust myself. I don't really trust my thought processes. I don't really trust what I'm saying. I don't really trust how I see things. And yeah, I don't take any medication for it. How I deal with it is I just view it as being a natural thing. Like it's a product of who I am. It's like saying, oh, you're gay, let's give you some, you know, chemical cosh, or let's lobotomize you and you'll feel better. Like I view how I am as being totally natural. I don't pathologize myself. You know, I kind of went crazy. You know, I don't really think there's a point where I got better. You know, I don't want to think of it as getting better. I just it just changed into something else, and that's just part of life. So depression is the same. I don't like calling it depression, but looking back, I had like, you know, very unhealthy relationship with my day to day life. You know, like just all that kind of stuff. So and you know, when you go through this, like people are always telling you to, oh, you need to go and go see the doctor. You need to go get some, you know, pills and all that kind of stuff. And I guess it's in my nature, probably stuff in my past. I have this thing about my mum having depression, but she denies it. But I remember her like pouring all her pills down the drain and stuff. So those things like have like a big kind of impact on you. But also I had this thing where they wanted my son to have Ritalin, and I probably talked about this in the past, but you know, with the most flimsiest diagnosis, they wanted him to have Ritalin. And I was like really shocked that's how easy it is to just put this like kid on Ritalin to make him be better or conform or something. So that made me question the kind of orthodoxy of like, of drugs and doctors and all that kind of stuff. And so I end up developing my own kind of theories on all these kind of things. So you know, I think in the past I've talked about like locked in life syndrome and all these kind of things. So they're a way of like locked in life syndrome. You know, it's, you know, you're driven mad because you're trapped in the life you don't want to have, and that's how people end. You know, you can't escape from it, and it's like probably horrific. So a lot of people experience that. But it's a way of trying to, I guess it's being compassionate to yourself and trying to be understanding of yourself and giving yourself, you know, like it, by me poo-pooing the idea of being depressed, or trying to not use the word depressed, or definitely not using the word clinical depression, or chemical imbalance, or I have a diagnosis of this. You know, like the doctor doesn't see you long enough to give you a diagnosis. He's just, you're just a thing, you know, just a, like, you know, next kind of thing. So it's a way of trying to build a landscape, build this landscape, this map of yourself and your history and your future and how you operate, that allows you to kind of pretend to be sane, you know, to be, but in the end, you end up looking totally insane. Like, this probably sounds totally insane. So, you know, but then you have to be blunt with these things. You know, maybe that's if more people talked like this and were honest, you have this kind of fake honesty of like, oh, I'm Stephen Fry and I've bipolar, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not, I don't really think that's kind of helpful. I think you have to come up with something better than that, really. You know, like, feel sorry for me. There's something, you know, like I'm an injured person or whatever. Like, I think it's good to give someone some kind of hope, you know, how to kind of do this. So I thought, anyway, so I think I better like round this up before the people come along and, you know, bundle me into a van, take me to the mental asylum, which is funny when people actually do that, but that's another story. So I thought I'd finish with a little clip from The Living Dead, not the film, that's quite a good film. But is it Adam Curtis, Richard Curtis? One makes the crap films, one makes good documentaries. But it's from this documentary, the documentary The Living Dead, and the episode was Have You Used Me as a Fish Long Enough? And it was in this documentary, there's a woman, I don't think she's ever named, and she tells this story about the CIA. She was part of Operation Ultra. Is that Operation Ultra? MK Ultra. Now, this is another thing about objective reality versus subjective reality. So in objective reality, you have conspiracies, which are true. And in subjective reality, you have conspiracy theories. And all those people are crazy. Anyway, so MK Ultra is like, it's something it's worth looking into because it's a real thing. And so in MK Ultra, they did all these experiments on people in the 50s and 60s using, you know, drugs and all sorts of stuff to try and learn if you could like program people, brainwash them, and all these kind of experiments. And all the data and nearly everything about what they did was destroyed. We have very little evidence of what they actually did. We have like only very small bit of evidence for, you know, proof remains of what the program was doing. And a study of the CIA is a good thing to do if you want to understand the world around us as well. So, but in this MK Ultra, they went into psychiatric hospitals and they started giving electric shock therapy to people, not just the normal safe amount. They were like shocking people to the point where this woman was shocked so many times that she didn't remember what her husband looked like, what her children looked like. She didn't know what sex was. Like, she was, her brain was like completely wiped. So it's completely empty. And it just is. So I'm just going to play you. We're going to finish now. I'm just going to play you the end of this documentary where the woman reflects back on the results of what happened. Because I think what she talks about is, again, it's the objective truth of her experience, which is not the subjective truth you would have if this was a film on Netflix or a, you know, like a fictional kind of book. This is like it's very raw and interesting what she says. So I apologize if anybody was upset with it by this podcast, and it's not the usual thing, but I really don't like upsetting people, and I don't like people to think that I am flippant with these things or don't care how people feel. And yes, I am thin-skinned because I actually do really care about these things. So hopefully, definitely next time we talk, it'll be more funny. Anyway, thanks for listening.
That age is now over, and we are caught up by the irrational forces of the past once again. Except for a few individuals who live in a different world, a world free of memory.
What had been done to me was wrong and horrible, but I was freed up because I didn't have any memory. I didn't have to worry about a memory. I was exactly who I had shaped myself into being, and people kept wanting to feel sorry for me and that I was a victim. I understand that because there were horrible experiments, but on a personal, individual basis, I was not a victim because I was freed up from any of the garbage that people who have memory carry around with them all the time. Memory is a dangerous thing. Not just for individuals, but for whole societies, for cultures. They keep looking backwards and trying to relive and reshape the past when they can't. And they know they can't, but it keeps pulling them backwards, and they keep reliving the stuff that happened. And I'm free of that.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.